Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
To the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today, I'm delighted to have back on, Ellen Brown. You all know Ellen. Ellen does absolutely fabulous writing. She's done a lot of writing on different topics in the past, but listeners know her and readers know her recently because of her absolutely top-of-the-line financial writing and her book that I always mention and want listeners to know about in this program is Web of Debt. It is really a sensational book. Listeners who haven't read it, you don't know what you're missing. You really need to get hold of a copy of Web of Debt because it's the best explanation I have read in great detail of our private banking system. It goes back historically. It shows what works, what doesn't work, and it explains how the Wall Street bandits stole our money creation power and, most important, how we can get it back. And Ellen recently established a wonderful way to get it back. She now heads the Public Banking Institute. And what it is, it's basically an initiative to turn money power to the people, get it back, in get it away from Wall Street, get it away from the Wall Street-controlled Federal Reserve. Give it to states. Give it to local communities. That's where it really belongs. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful initiative. They have a website. Anybody can access it to get information about it. publicbankinginstitute.org, and it'll take you right to it. It'll give you information. And Ellen, oh, it is just it's a marvelous initiative. We have to keep hammering on this every time you come on, because I really think public banking is an idea whose time has come.
Yeah, we now have seven states that have bill spending, which is remarkable. I think they're just sprouting. There were three in the last, three this year in 2011.
Can I tell you something?
Yes.
I think it's because of the work that you've done. They're reading your articles, Ellen, and you're saying they're knocking themselves on the side of their heads and saying, "Why didn't we think of this?"
Yeah, well, actually, you know, the more there are, the easier it is for them to jump on the bandwagon. As long
as
other states are doing it, they all go, well, we should be doing this too. And in fact, a congressman called me just a couple of days ago, and that's the same thing he said. Well, it's so obvious. Why didn't we do it earlier? So.
It is really so obvious. And, of course, if they read Web of Debt, it would have become even more obvious. But, you know, some of the best ideas are the simplest. And some of those ideas, amazingly, people don't think about it a lot earlier than it finally dawns on them that, gee, this thing looks pretty workable. And then as they look into it, they discover, my God, you know, we can really do this. And I have to tell you this, two things. I found the bill that was introduced in the Illinois legislature. It's one very long paragraph. It's a long paragraph. Had I written it, I'd have made it three paragraphs. But it's one paragraph, and it's the you've got it in your most recent article. It's about creating the Community Bank of the Community Bank of Illinois Act. And, I mean, you inspired me, Ellen. I think I may write about this myself and quote you and promote the Public Banking Institute. I developed a mindset when I first started in small family business, and I was the guy who had to push things along and get other people motivated and so on. And way back then, I used to be a sports fan. I'm not really one now, but I was an admirer of Vince Lombardi. Vince Lombardi. There was a ball player by the name of Ernie Lombardi, and I remember him too. Way back in the 30s and 1940s, I remember him. But Vince Lombardi, and Vince Lombardi was a guy who simply accepted nothing less than victory. My analogy based on his profession was I could only see the goal line. And my goal was to motivate the people around me, not very many, just a few, but motivate the people around me only to see the goal line, and that no matter what obstacles we face, we're going over that goal line. And we're all going over together. And, you know, sometimes you make it, sometimes you don't. But I think we made it a lot more often because we just developed that notion that, you know, if you have a good idea and if you work hard enough at it, there's no reason in the world why you can't make it work. So we made it work.
I had that same
public
feeling.
Public banking is that idea, Ellen. You continue. Talk about your most recent article and the states that are jumping on this.
Well, the three new ones are Oregon, Washington State, and Maryland. Oregon and Washington State have bills to actually start a bank, and then Maryland has a bill for a feasibility study to look into the possibilities. And another thing that has been very helpful is the Center for State Innovation, which is based in Wisconsin, has put, I guess they put $25,000 into a study of the feasibility of the Washington bill, or what it would do, what the Washington bill could do for Washington, what such a bank could do for Washington, and they based it on the Bank of North Dakota and said if they use that same model, what will this mean for Washington? And they showed all the benefits that would come from it. But it's a very, you know, over 20 pages, a very long report. And now they've done the same thing for Oregon, very long report. So this legislator that called me from San Diego, I mentioned them, and he said, "Oh yeah, we'll probably want them to do a study for us too." So once you had that, when you have the data like that, somebody who is official and nonpartisan, who is actually looking at the data and determining what the possibilities are, I think it makes it much more credible and much easier for legislators to say, yeah, we can get behind this. This is a good idea.
It really is such a marvelous idea, and you're right. I mean, I'm amazed that you get these congressional people. Of course, we're talking about at the state level. Was this a state representative who called you?
Yes, it's from San Diego, a legislator in the state Congress, yeah.
California state legislature.
California state Congress, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that's where you got to get the thing going. I mean, it would be lovely to get some congressional legislators behind the idea as well. That would just push the ball along a little further and a little faster. But it's the state people who have to act. And what better state to get this thing rolling in than California, Ellen? If California ever managed to do this, that would really be, there's no way that could be hidden. I mean, that would be a major, major achievement if they established the state bank. And you enlightened me. I did not know that Illinois has a bill that was introduced, and you've got these other states. And if we can get a couple of them passed, that would really be historic. I mean, that would be marvelous. I'd even want these politicians on this program, and I do not like having politicians on this program. I like having real people, not those people.
Well, yeah, I might recommend Jared Gardner I can recommend several speakers, but Jared Gardner is a mortgage banker who has helped push forward the bill in Oregon. But they have laid the groundwork so well over the last 2 years, so he could tell how it was done. They've worked with the local bankers, meeting with them privately, explaining to them that this is not going to threaten them, that it actually will help the local bankers. And so the local bankers are behind it, just as in North Dakota, the Bank of North Dakota partners with the local banks, helps them with their capital requirement, and helps, helps them to do projects that otherwise they wouldn't have the capital to do. So they can take on larger projects, and the Bank of North Dakota sort of guarantees them. But that doesn't mean the Bank of North Dakota is still not taking the first risk. The local bank is dealing with the customer and taking the initial risk. It's sort of like your secondary insurance, you know, if you have two sets of insurance, you know, the one that steps in after the other one fails. So anyway, it's very helpful for the local banks. They have more local banks per capita, community banks per capita in North Dakota than in any other state. So his group has worked with the bankers, worked with the small businessmen, and they're all behind it. I mean, there's a big majority of the small businessmen think that they need that. They've been cut off from credit. It's the small businesses that do most of the new hiring. And they can't hire because they can't get credit lines anymore. They used to be. Now I understand somebody told me that instead of a credit line, what a bank will give you as a small business is a credit card. Well, great. You know, those are short-term loans. They make you liable for big interest rates and fees. And so it's not the same at all as having a credit line or a loan from a bank.
Oh, indeed not. Indeed not. And you continue. I mean, this is just marvelous stuff. When I read your article, your newest article, I didn't realize that the ball has moved ahead as far as it had. And these ideas move slowly, Ellen, because, you know, you have a system that's existed one way for so many years. And you have only one, dare I call North Dakota an outlier. It's really an outlier doing the thing, what should be the end thing for all the states. But North Dakota is small, so it's easy for North Dakota to go unnoticed or unreported or discussed or whatever. But you've written about it so many times, and I've done it a few times, usually quoting you, because you're the one who really introduced me to this idea. And then you've got these other states moving along, but this would be a major change if we ever made a transition from the Fed having it all for themselves, basically, to states beginning to break away piece by piece and going their own way. And they don't need the Fed anymore. They can do it themselves and do it a lot better and be efficient and grow their state economically and help their people and local businesses. And the hell with the Fed. Who needs them?
Mm-hmm. Well, other countries, you know, have had publicly owned banks, and they wind up getting privatized or corrupted or taking over by the big business interests. So I would assume that's the reason that North Dakota has kept a low profile for a long time. It's just like I forgot the name of that, the little island off of England that has done that for a couple of hundred years. They've just printed the money to fund their infrastructure. Guernsey and Jersey, the islands of Guernsey.
Yeah. you wrote about it.
Yeah, but you never hear about them. You know, they've kept very quiet. And I know another country that does that, and I asked, may I write about that? And they said, no, we'd rather you didn't.
Well, it would be like in the Chicago area, maybe like the Public Bank of Oak Lawn. You know, one Chicago out of many, many dozens. I mean, they could exist, and the people in Oak Lawn, that community, would know about it. But one for me downtown Chicago, a long way from Oak Lawn, I wouldn't know what they're doing there, and the Chicago Tribune wouldn't tell me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't read the Chicago Tribune, so it wouldn't matter.
The Commonwealth Bank of Australia operated on, it was a wonderful model for most of the 20th century, and then they got privatized. I mean, it was just too good for the big investors to let alone, and so they managed to buy the thing out. And in New Zealand, they had a public banking system, and it got bought out. So that's what you want to avoid. Actually, in New Zealand, they now have Kiwi banks, which are their public banks in the local post offices, and they openly compete with the other banks. You know, in here, where everybody's being so careful to say, no, we're not competing with the banks. We're helping the banks, and, you know, this is a partnership, a banker's bank, et cetera. But in New Zealand, the Kiwi banks, they say right on their website, you can get a better interest rate here. Why go to those other banks when you can bank here? And they're dealing directly with the customers, and they're a better deal, and they're getting flooded with, it's on their website, it said they were getting 300 new customers a day.
Oh, that's marvelous.
It's just a better idea.
Is marvelous. Yeah. New Zealand is a small country. I forget the population, maybe a few million. I think the population is smaller than Chicago, a good bit smaller than Chicago. But New Zealand certainly isn't an unknown place. And, that would be absolutely marvelous. I don't know that they are an enlightened country, unlike so many others, but the fact that they have this, and if they keep gaining all this traction, that really would be marvelous. I agree with you that the danger that the big boys with deep pockets, and if the pockets start emptying out, they just fill them back up again. Mm-hmm. A few computer clicks, and how many billion do you need today? You have to stick another zero on the end of that, would you? I mean, all they want, and they'll go after, as you say, anything that threatens their franchise that they ideally would like to be exclusive. And then it depends. I mean, why does a state, let's say California opened a public bank and it was very successful, and the state really started to turn around dramatically economically, and the Wall Street banks wanted to make a hostile takeover, basically. Why couldn't the Public Bank of California, whatever it might be called, simply tell them in plain English, in polite language, to go stick it? I mean, what could Wall Street do?
No. They can't. First of all, the Bank of North Dakota has been around for 92 years, so you can't say it's unconstitutional. You can't say that the model will fail because the Bank of North Dakota is a more financially sound and more profitable bank than most other banks. So, and it's rated A+. It would have a better rating than that, except that they're not FDIC insured. They're self-insured. But in Oregon, for example, they don't want FDIC insurance either, because first of all, it's very expensive. Oregon's a deep pocket in itself, and you don't want to give the feds the possibility of putting you in receivership or putting your bank in receivership. So it's a better model. It's just a technical reason that they haven't given it a triple A rating.
I think maintaining full sovereignty is the way to go. And clearly, Ellen, the Federal Reserve was established in 1913. Clearly, the U.S. Constitution has nothing whatsoever, it has just the opposite in it of what I'll say, but it has absolutely nothing in it saying it is illegal for any non-federal operation to establish a banking franchise. It has to be federal. It cannot be state or local. There is nothing in the Constitution that says that.
No, there are two banking systems. There's the federal system and the state system. So well, many banks are state franchised, or, you know, it's the state commissioner that gives them their charter.
Oh yeah, and in the Bill of Rights, the 10th Bill of Rights saying all powers not given to the federal government mm-hmm. Automatically go to the states, so the states have sovereignty, and the federal government has nothing in the Constitution gives the federal government the exclusive money franchise except to create money. But it doesn't say that the states can't have their own operations, and they're not creating money the way the Congress should, as the Constitution says. But they certainly could open up a bank and take deposits, and then use the magic of fractional reserve banking to mm-hmm. expand and make loans, and they can charge whatever interest rate they want. I mean, if we could have raging inflation, and the federal banks under banks in the Federal Reserve System could charge you a double-digit interest rates, which they did back in the 1980s. I don't think in the 1970s, but for sure in the 1980s, double-digit interest rates if you wanted a loan. And home mortgage rates at one time got so high, who the devil could afford to take one? I mean, really high when Treasury bills and Treasury bonds were paying in the high double digits. If you bought one of them, and I sure remember because I bought a number of them, it was marvelous to get that huge interest rate return, and it was guaranteed certainly full faith and credit of the government. But there's nothing that says that the states can't issue their own credit. I mean, they can, and as you say, in over 90 years, nobody has ever challenged North Dakota, so how could they ever challenge another state?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not the state itself. It's the state bank, which is a publicly owned institution. And if it's illegal for anybody but Congress to issue money or to issue credit, then every bank in the country is illegal. Because that's what they all do.
Well, they sure as hell are illegal because the Congress isn't printing the money. Wall Street is printing the money.
Uh-huh. Well, that's what you know, your monetary reform purists, that's what they argue, that nobody should be creating money except the federal government, and that therefore to have state banks is a compromise. I mean, I wrote the line, if you can't beat them, join them, and they thought that was shocking that, you know, I'm succumbing to this corrupt model. But no, it's a good model if it's publicly owned. I mean, that it's better to have money issued by a publicly owned bank than to have money issued by a public body that's independent, like the Federal Reserve. We've seen what happens there. It gets corrupted, and the Congress has no control of it. The people certainly have no control of it. And that's a body sitting off there in Washington trying to determine how much money the system's going to need. If you had the money coming from local banks in response to local needs, you're going to have the right amount of credit out there. You're going to have the credit that the people need, because it's a question of supply and demand. And you're still, because it's a public entity, you still have all the benefits of publicly issued money. All money today is just credit or debt. I mean, the monetary purists would get rid of the whole debt model and just issue money. But debt is all right. It's like the yin and yang of money. You've got a debt. It's like a big community currency system. Somebody's debt is somebody else's money. In other words, if I wash your car and you give it, I belong to a community currency system like this. It's all on the internet. So if you do something for someone else, you can give them five favors, and which means they've got five credits and you've got five debits, and then you have to pay off your debits when somebody else wants you to do work for the, or I got that backwards, but you see what I mean, that it's okay to have a debt. A debt is just the opposite side. A minus one is the opposite of a plus one, and if you're going to have a plus one in a credit-based, debt-based system such as we have, you've got to have the minus ones. I was tempted to write an article on why we need a federal debt, because there's so much negative stuff going around. People keep asking me, well, in fact, one interviewer wrote to me and said he wanted my response on this. What are people going to do when bread goes to $10,000 a loaf or something? Well, it's not going to happen. It's a misconception of how our monetary system works, that we have to have a federal debt if we're going to have a money supply. The way our system is set up now, if you have no debt, in fact, in 1836, when Andrew Jackson paid off the debt and pulled the money, all the federal money, out of the U.S. bank and put it into the state banks, there was a depression because it shrunk the money supply, because money, as the system is set up, is the public debt. So.
Oh, exactly. And there's nothing wrong with debt as long as it doesn't get totally unmanageable, the way our federal debt has gotten to be now, when it just spiraled out of control and it just keeps growing and growing. And, I mean, that's a separate topic, Ellen. And to me, the reason the debt has grown is because the bandits want it to grow so that the federal government will have to come back and do what it's doing now, say, my God, we need to have fiscal responsibility.
Austerity, I know. And
meaning,
they've wanted
on the back, on the backs of ordinary people, not the bandits that caused the problem in the first place, colluding with the federal government to do it. So, now we need to cut the budget. But not the military budget, and not the corporate budget, and not all the fat cat budgets. And at the same time, we give tax cuts to the rich. And even in the states, Ellen, some of the states that are moaning and groaning and having to make massive cuts, some of these states gave their richest residents tax cuts. And if they, I think California was, didn't California have a tax cut for rich people?
I don't know.
I believe so, and New York, in one of my articles, a couple of months ago or so, it was about Illinois, but I had a section in it about Governor Cuomo in New York, who guaranteed something like $1 billion for the fat cats will not be touched. But then he rattled off a whole menu of cuts that have to be made and will be made on the backs of ordinary people living in New York. But what about this $1 billion that you're just giving away that you don't have to? Why not make the aristocracy of the state pay their fair share? Why not make the aristocracy of all states pay their fair share? But we don't, so we have a dysfunctional tax system. We give huge benefits to the people who already have too much and don't need it. And then we cry poverty and make ordinary people pay the penalty for that. What a rotten system that is.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, I'm for local sovereignty. I believe in unity. But I would not shed a tear, Ellen, I'll say this very frankly, if my state suddenly decided we're seceding and we will form whatever they want to call it. I mean, they can even change the name from Illinois to something else. I don't care what they call it, but the nation of Illinois. I will be very happy to, I'll lose my Medicare and my Social Security. Oh, heavens, that would be... I wouldn't tell anybody in Washington.
Well,
the way around that would be for the nation of Illinois to pick up that obligation and guarantee it to all its residents, because a lot of old people live in Illinois and they certainly wouldn't want to lose that. So
if they understood that they could actually just issue that as credit or as money, without hyperinflating the system, which I think you could, but I would love to have some, like that $25,000 study, I would love to have somebody to commission to do a study, because I'm just sure instinctively that you could fund Social Security and Medicare and for all, Medicare for all, and higher education for all for free, and that it would, the state would come out better in the end than otherwise. I mean, that was definitely true for the GI Bill. I was in Sweden when I was invited to do a book fair there because my book was translated into Swedish, and they had, up until the 90s, they had the best welfare state in the world. So they were paying 50% in taxes, which sounded outrageous, but we pay 40% in taxes if you count the hidden taxes. And they were getting everything covered, all those things. And they're so secure. You know, their lives are just there. I mean, they still have a good welfare system. And they're just not worried about, they're not worried about their health care. We feel that we have to have our money making money because the government doesn't provide for those things. And so everybody is out there scrambling and betting in this speculative market, which is doing so much damage globally, but also in the U.S. I hear your music.
Yeah, we need to take a break, Ellen. I say unreservedly that since it was established, the Federal Reserve, aside from nuclear weapons, may be the world's most destructive weapon of mass destruction. The Federal Reserve, supposedly established to smooth things out and promote growth, has done exactly the opposite of that. We have had a terrible roller coaster economy under the Federal Reserve, and I wrote about it a couple of times. It really is a very destructive process that enriches the super rich and really takes it out on the backs of everybody else. Let's take a quick break and we'll come right back.
Radio Network.
I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join the founders of the Godspeed Institute for Spiritual Learning, Carol and Michael Hallenbeck, for Godspeed, an enlightening and informative journey into the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Through conversations with experts worldwide, this weekly live call-in program is an on-air classroom aimed at helping listeners gain exposure to and insight into religious and spiritual practices around the world. Every Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Mike Adams, the editor-in-chief and key writer of naturalnews.com and co-founder of the nonprofit site consumerwellness.org. I'll be starting a special segment on the Progressive Radio Network called The Health Ranger with Mike Adams. I'll be interviewing everyone from Dr. Jane Goodall to Suzanne Summers. Find out the latest in natural healing news and easy ways to live a healthier and more holistic lifestyle. So tune in on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern every week on the Progressive Radio Network to hear The Health Ranger with Mike Adams.
Is someone driving you crazy? Do you have a cheating boyfriend or girlfriend? An ex you can't let go of? An obnoxious boss? Adult kids who won't listen? I'm Hollis Polk, and I fix relationship problems. Your life, your relationship with Hollis Polk offers you practical solutions for all sorts of people problems. Listen and call in Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, or download the podcast at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
You're listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
Listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Welcome back on with Ellen Brown, talking about public banking. It really is an idea whose time has come. Ellen, there's no question that whoever controls the power of money in a nation really has pretty much dominant control over how that nation is governed and what it does and so on. And you've quoted the Rothschild family from the 19th century, and so have I, that there were several quotes, I think, but one of them was to the effect that give me control of a nation's money, and I don't give a damn what else they do. They can make any laws they want. If I have the money, I have the power, and indeed they do. That really is the ear in the lungs and the blood in the veins, and you have control of that. You have a franchise in what that country does. So in this country and in most others, unfortunately, we have private bankers that have that power, and they literally have a stranglehold on how their governments are governed. And the people in these countries pay dearly for it. It's shocking and it's shameful. And unless there's a way to end this, there's no way out from under it to really have everything from basic rights, human rights, civil rights, and the very notion of democracy. Democracy, in my mind, Ellen, is absolutely incompatible with privately controlled money. It's fire and ice. They simply are incompatible.
Mm-hmm. And with the state-owned, getting back to the state-owned banks, the advantage of that is that the Wall Street banks have all these advantages. Like, we live in two economies, basically. So the Wall Street bankers are trading among themselves. They can borrow from each other at 0.2%. But we, the state, which is, like, ridiculously low, and it was the state, the interest rate was driven that low by the Federal Reserve in order to save Wall Street from going under. But we, the states, we, the people of the states and local governments, can't borrow at that rate. We have to borrow from Wall Street. California is borrowing at an average interest rate of 4.7%. So that's a huge spread that the Wall Street banks get. And Ben Bernanke recently was asked, well, I wrote about this a while back, but in January, President Obama first took office, he said, well, maybe the Federal Reserve could bail out the state and local governments who are bearing the brunt of all this collapse that was Wall Street's fault. Maybe the Federal Reserve could bail out the state and local governments in the same way they did the banks. In other words, by extending these very low, very cheap credit lines, 0.2%. And so in January of this year, Ben Bernanke said, no, we're not going to do that, even though, you know, they did extend $12.3 trillion in credit to the banks, banks and banking institutions and big corporations. So they obviously have the money. I mean, it's not a matter of having the money. Obviously, nobody has $12.3 trillion on their books. They just extended credit. It was all just credit. But they could do the same credit written up on their books, the same zeros, like you say, pluses and minuses, for the state and local government. States would only require $140 billion collectively to balance their budgets, which is 1% of the $12.3 trillion. But no.
Ellen. I think it's up to 175 now. But even 175, 140 compared to 12.3 or 4 trillion. I mean, literally pocket change.
Maybe 2%.
Would bail the states out.
Max, yeah. So, but Ben Bernanke's argument is it's not that we don't have the money. Of course, they obviously do. I mean, or that it's not that we couldn't do it. He said, but it's not in our mandate. It's not in the Federal Reserve Act. Well, the Federal Reserve Act was written by bankers for bankers to protect bankers. So that's why we need a public banking system. We need to set something up that's by people for people, of the people by the people for the people, just like what Wall Street is doing for themselves. Right now, there are two economies, and we're in the outcast one. They've got all the advantages. So that's what I keep writing about. I just want to make this clear. You know, once you see those, it's so outrageous. I mean, now you do the same thing, but I mean, that's the whole point of writing, is people go along and they buy the conventional media explanation of things or the textbook explanation, and everything seems okay, and they don't question. But in fact, it's an outrage.
again, there is no more important issue that people need to know enough about to realize we're doing it the wrong way now. There is a right way, and it's not that complicated. It's really very simple when you come down to the basic nuts and bolts, and they need to understand that they're literally being screwed by not doing that. And when you talk about the major media, Ellen, this topic is never raised, to my knowledge, in the major media. I don't know that anybody gets on the air on one of the major networks or cable channels and starts explaining the faults or the pitfalls with the Federal Reserve and the idea that maybe public banking is an idea that we at least ought to give a very close look at, because maybe there's something really important there. I just can't imagine any program on corporate TV or corporate radio with that topic even being mentioned, let alone explained. I mean, they simply wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's why we have to keep getting out there, or why I have to keep getting out there and saying it over and over. It's like President Bush said, it's the propaganda. You got to keep saying it over and over.
Did he say that?
He said, that's my job. He said, my job is the propaganda. I think it was in one of those Michael Moore movies, you know, where he said, that's my job, the propaganda. You got to keep saying it over and over and over.
I can't believe it. That guy actually said one intelligent thing in his 8 years in office.
No, my guess is
I give credit where credit is due.
Well, I think somebody told him that, you know, and he just blurted it out. He said, somebody told him, no, your job is to say this over and over and over. It's propaganda.
Well, you know, I mean, the power of the message, Ellen, anybody who watches commercials, I can't imagine why anybody does. They're absolutely banned in my household. But the power of commercials is you don't just see a commercial once. They keep hammering you with it over and over and over and over. I mean, it really is ad nauseum. And then they make it amusing, like cartoons or whatever the devil they do. And they get these ideas floating in people's minds. People may go to sleep and dream about this stuff. I mean, these ideas have to be repeated. You get something good talked about once, even for a full program, and it literally goes right over the heads of most everybody and has no impact whatsoever. I knew that a long time ago. It's the power of repetition that really makes the point, and you need to reach enough people too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I don't worry too much, like if I get rebuffed or ignored or whatever. It's because the first time around, like several states have tried to, or several politicians earlier tried to bring state bank bills, and they, candidates, you know, and they lost in their run for office. But the thing is, they got the idea out there. So the first round is just getting the idea out there, and then later you have some bills, and then finally you actually have a bank, and then you have a model, and then you see how the model works. I mean, it's all kind of a gradual process. It is a challenge how you get a grassroots movement going, because we don't have the money. You know, we're not sitting at the top and telling our big media what to print. We're starting at the bottom, and we just have to somehow inspire people. So that's a challenge, to set off these sparks of inspiration.
I've written on stuff like the great victories that have been won on social issues in the U.S., Ellen. And, I mean, there were some major ones. This country, for so many generations, had slavery. And it took the effort. It didn't take a mass initiative to get the ball rolling and finally succeed in ending slavery in the country. It took a small group of committed people, and it took many years, and finally, you could say the Civil War had something to do with it. The world changed after the Civil War ended, but slavery ended. Well, that certainly didn't empower black people, because one form of slavery ended, and really another one began, Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the marvelous civil rights struggle that went on for so many years. And finally, it was successful in the 1960s. But the punchline for me, and women's suffrage to vote, I mean, our founding fathers, Jefferson and Washington and all those characters, I mean, they just didn't think women ought to be able to have the right to vote. And of course, black people weren't people; they were property. But it took the women's suffrage effort a century finally to get a constitutional amendment that gave women the right to vote. I mean, it's astonishing to young women today if they ever think about that. They simply couldn't imagine that this country was founded with women not having that basic right. But the punchline for me is, it doesn't matter how glorious a victory you achieve, unless you realize if you don't stay on this and keep working on it as hard as you can, you never give up, you never relent, then those bastards are going to steal it away from you. And that's exactly what's happened in civil rights. And I remember an article I wrote some months back where I quoted a current civil rights leader saying, the quote was roughly, I don't remember the exact words, but these were pretty close to his exact words, all the gains of the 1960s have been lost. They're all gone because people who won rights just relaxed and the bastards ate away at them and stole them all back. So you're right, Ellen, on a public bank, you could get some states establishing these things. And if they're not vigilant and if they're not determined to fend off the barbarians at the gates, then they could end up losing their wonderful achievement. Mm-hmm. So you can never give up. These people are too relentless, they're too vicious, they're too illegal, they're too rich, and they do not want competition.
Yeah, actually, 100 years ago, I'm just writing about this, and you know, I'm trying to write another book, a book on public banking. 100 years ago, Mary Ellen Leese, who was the woman, she was a populist leader, fiery orator, who is alleged to be the prototype for Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. She gave a speech that started out, Wall Street owns the country. In fact, that was the name of it, Wall Street owns the country. And she was harping on, I mean, it could have been written today. She was saying the same things we're saying now. So that's 100 years that these ideas have been percolating out there. So maybe, hopefully, we're at the point where we can actually have victory like the suffragettes, like you said. I'm hoping that people say, well, how do you keep, nobody trusts government, and how do you keep it from being corrupted? But I think because of the Internet, you could now have everything just be exposed to public view. I mean, it used to be that even if you allowed people to look in the books, they'd have to go down there somewhere and find the books and know what they were looking for. But now you could mandate that all the deals that the bank does be posted somewhere on the Internet, and anybody who was interested could go and research it. You could mandate that all this information was open to public view, and then the public could keep them on the straight and narrow.
I can't wait for you to finish your book and get it published so I can read it and we can talk about it on this program. But again, it's almost like whatever you covered in Web of Debt, this is a companion volume to Web of Debt. And it's, again, it's a marvelous, important topic, Ellen. And any idea when you'll be getting done with it?
Well, I was aiming for April. But, you know, I've got so much else to do. You know, when you write a book,
I know.
You have to live and eat and breathe this book, and it just sort of it starts growing organically. You know, you don't really, like, my own theories were formed after I would write a chapter, and then I would sort of see from the material I had assembled what it was, the material would sort of speak to me, you know. But I mean, it's all sort of a meditative process, and you've got to just do nothing but that for a while. And I just can't do it. I mean, I'm trying, and I try to do some every night. Fortunately, I've got a woman working for me now who's doing my typing, and so she comes around at 10 o'clock, and I think, oh no, Emily's coming. I gotta get something together. So it's forcing me to keep on, you know.
Well, relax. Take your time. Nobody's breathing down your back with a deadline. So if you get it done in April or May or June, what you're doing, Ellen, is something that is so important. It is well worth waiting for. And I guarantee you, I don't have to tell you, but I'll tell you anyway, you absolutely have a regular platform on this program to talk about it, to promote it, to spread the word. And I would urge my listeners, Ellen, and again, I mean, this idea is so important to the welfare, literally, of everybody, except the fat cat bandits that are destroying our lives, that we need to know about this, and we ourselves have to spread the word to others, because that's the way these initiatives really gain momentum and spread. And when enough people want something bad enough, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and one reason I haven't come out too much until now is that we have this big Google group, and we go round and round and round in these issues. And so, I mean, I'm a writer and a lawyer. I'm not a banker or a politician. So you really need boots on the ground, people who know how banking actually works and how politics actually works and what will fly with politicians. So it's taken a long time to get all that expertise to draw on so that I have the confidence to come out and say. So I was mentioning Jared Gardner, who's working on the Oregon thing. He just said today there was that congressman that contacted me from San Diego. They wanted to know how to set up the capital requirements. Where are you going to find the capital for this? Now, I know in Michigan, the proposal that was made there a year ago that didn't survive, they were proposing to do a bond issue for $50 million. And I saw an article in the Detroit News that conservative position was, you know, we can't afford any more bond issues, and we don't need another bank and that sort of thing. So that died. So that's the question, where are you going to get the capital? So Jared's suggestion is that there are these rainy day funds. You have to be careful which ones you use. You have to find out whether you can use the CalPERS money, the pension money. But there are definitely rainy day funds sitting around that aren't being used, that I don't know what, maybe highway fund or whatever. They have all these funds sitting around. That are the reason they're there is that state and local governments do not have credit lines. If they had a credit line, like in North Dakota, for example, when Fargo had this big flood, the Bank of North Dakota stepped in, funded everything for them, gave them credit, put a moratorium on the foreclosures, and just made everything right. And now that area is booming again. They have a big housing market going. So that worked for them, unlike New Orleans. I mean, it was a flood the size of the New Orleans flood for North Dakotans, and they just cleaned it right up quite quickly with their own bank because they had this instant credit line to their own bank. And when the state government went over budget a few years ago, they just tapped into their credit line with the Bank of North Dakota. They didn't have to do a bond issue, or they didn't have to tap any rainy day funds. They just drew on a little credit from their own bank, and then the next year they straightened it out, got the budget in shape again. So anyway,
by the way, the $50 million you mentioned in Michigan, it really is very disappointing that didn't go forward. In Illinois, Ellen, there's a battle going on. The governor wants to float an $8 billion plus bond issue to help the state out of its debt problem. And I think there are people in the legislature that don't want this. But Illinois, Michigan states are probably reasonably comparable in size. So $50 million compared to over $8 billion. I mean, $50 million, that should be no problem for a big
state.
I mean, even the smallest state, $50 million is really a drop in the bucket. And considering the potential for return on that, you know, you want to make an investment that will get you a decent return. And, boy, I mean, if you get some competent people to run what you want to set up, the return is virtually guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. In North Dakota, the bank returned a 26% dividend. I think it was 2009 or 2008. You know, huge compared to our rainy day funds. I know our treasurer manages a fund, which is all the rainy day funds that want to invest or put their money with him. That I know the highway fund and the different environmental funds, all these things are in there, of $71 billion. So he's got $71 billion at something like 2% interest. So if you can get 26% interest, all those funds are going to be clamoring to get in, I would think. They'd want to be part of the equity investment in the bank rather than getting this marginal return in Wall Street.
I wish they would let me put some of my money in their bank and pay me 26%.
I know.
Oh, boy, I mean, I'm serious. Wouldn't anybody jump at something like that if they had any understanding of what this bank is and what it's done and how successful it's been? It's not exactly a fly-by-night speculative Wall Street-type deal. I mean, I would feel as safe doing that as I would be buying U.S. Treasuries, maybe more so. One other comment quickly. What I meant by spreading the word, by the way, Ellen, was we all have friends and family. Those are the people I want listeners to spread the word to. We all don't have a megaphone. We all don't host a radio program. We all don't write articles. But we all have family and friends, and we can talk to them and implant these ideas, and explain it a little bit so that people have some idea that hey, maybe there's a good idea floating around, and then anybody can go on the internet and get all the information they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. You never know where ideas come from. Like that Washington bill, it just popped out of nowhere. It had come up a year ago. I mean, there was talk of it, and I thought, wow, where did that come from? And then somebody wrote to me and said, oh, I've been reading your articles for a couple of years, and I've been beating the bushes and talking to legislators and, you know, publishing in my local paper and all that sort of thing. So you never know what kind of activities going on. If you just, like you say, you just have to have the conviction that if you keep moving forward, you'll get to the goal.
Well, I believe that. I absolutely believe it in my own personal life, and I've never thought of myself as anybody special. Whatever I've achieved in my life, Ellen, it was because of a lot of elbow grease and hard work. And I mean it. I know that I am not in any way special, but it's amazing. You know the old Woody Allen line, and I forget whether the percentage was 80% or 90% or something, but the Woody Allen line about, let's say, 80%. 80% of life is just showing up. And, I mean, he's right. He's right. You know, I mean, you can be brilliant and so on and so forth and have all kinds of advantages. But I knew brilliant people back in college, and I ended up with better grades than they got because I worked harder.
So, I have a sign in my wallet that says, anticipate miracles. And I look at that a lot.
Oh, yes. Create your own. Oh, the hour goes by so, so fast, Ellen. It goes by much, much too fast. I wish we could keep this going, but I'll send you an email, and we'll be like a soap opera. next month, stay tuned. Will California. I remember those serials in the movies when I was a little boy that went to Saturday afternoon double features, and they had those serials, and they wanted to bring you back for the next installment. So, you know, Mary hanging on a cliff, you know, will she be rescued, or will she fall and die? Well, you've got to come back and find out what happened to Mary. So please come back and find out what happened to California. Ellen, it is always a joy for me to spend an hour with you on air. It enlightens me, and I know it enlightens listeners. And my great thanks to you always for coming on.
Oh, thanks, Stephen. It's always a joy for me, too.
Oh, thanks, Ellen. I'll shoot you an email. I have one chore to do when the program is over, and then I'll send you an email. And then I'll take a lunch break.
Okay.
Thanks, Ellen. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.